to seek God for the next 4 weeks. There is a difference. And as we seek God, we will learn about seeking God. But I want to really encourage you right at the start that without any sort of fancy stuff or big inspirational stories, I just want to tell you this, that we need God. And I want to invite you right now to seek God at the start of the season of seeking God at CBC. And so there's a prayer going to come up on screen, the prayer of St. Anselm. And we prayed this last week, and I want to invite you to stand with me as we would seek God together, as we would pray this prayer together. So let's stand. Let's pray together. O Lord my God, teach my heart this day where and how to see you, where and how to find you. You have made me and remade me, and you have bestowed on me all the good things I possess, and still I do not know you. I have not yet done that for which I was made. Teach me to seek you, for I cannot seek you unless you teach me, or find you unless you show yourself to me. Let me seek you in my desire. Let me desire you in my seeking. Let me find you by loving you. Let me love you when I find you. Amen. Please have a seat. Some were asking about that prayer last week, so we've printed some copies off, and they're available at the Connect desk there later on if you want one of those. In the book of Exodus in the Bible, there's a story that goes over the chapters 32 to 34. And if you've got a Bible with you, you might want to turn to Exodus 32. Now, if you need a Bible, just throw your hand up and Jeremy will get one to you if you want to follow. It's not going to be on screen today, so a little bit of it, but not much. If you need a Bible, throw your hand up. Someone will get one to you. Thanks. In this story, we're introduced to a guy who I think probably, as far as what we have on record, is the most earnest seeking of God that I know of, next to Jesus when he's on the cross and he's crying out, my God, where are you? Next to that, I think this story contains for us a very earnest, deep, almost like aching kind of seeking. And the man's name is Moses. I mean, we're familiar with him. And it's really interesting that the climax to his seeking God is he has this little phrase that he says. It's a prayer to God. It's a request of God. And he says these simple words. Show me your glory. Which is kind of bizarre because by the time we get into this, Exodus 33 and he's asking God to show him his glory, if you know anything about Moses and his story so far, this 80-year-old guy, he's seen plenty of God's glory. Like, it's almost as if, like, Moses, you've had your share, you've had your fill, like, compared to anybody else, like, you've seen so much of God's glory. Like, why would you need more? You see, remember Moses? He's the guy who sees the burning bush, and then he has an encounter with God, and God declares to him, I am. He's the guy that then goes to Pharaoh in Egypt and stands before Pharaoh on God's behalf and demands that Pharaoh let God's people Israel go and be free from slavery. And the Pharaoh says no. And so he gets to be part of God's glory displayed to Egypt through the signs and wonders and plagues. And eventually he sees this amazing deliverance, redemption of Israel as they're set free from being slaves. Moses had seen God's glory. Moses then leads his people and he gets to see God's glory in another physical fashion. As they travel by day, there's this big pillar of cloud, and at night there's a pillar of fire. He has seen and experienced God's glory. And then they come to the Red Sea where the Egyptians have changed their mind and are pursuing them, and he sees God's hand at work and the Red Sea is divided and they walk through the Red Sea unharmed. He's seen the glory of God. They start journeying into the desert. He's got this million plus people with him, and he's wondering how he's going to look after them, and he sees God provide them with water every day. He sees God provide them with manna. He sees God provide them with quail. God meets their every need. He sees the glory of God every day in God's provision for his people. He sees God's glory as an enemy comes against them in the desert and they're so vulnerable, and he sees God protect them against the enemy. And then he sees this other side to God, that as the people constantly in response to God's glory, they moan and complain and whinge, wish they were back in Egypt. And he sees God's patience with them. And there comes this point where we come to in the story where they've arrived in the desert at this place called Mount Sinai. And as they get there, it's almost as if God is going, people, it's time you and me decided whether we want in or out of this relationship, because it's not working. You see, the people are just moaning, complaining, even though the glory of God is daily shown to them. And so at this Mount Sinai, as they're there, God says to them, I want to make a covenant with you, an agreement. It's about relationship. I want to know whether you are in on this relationship or not with me. And so this is what happens as they're at Sinai. And you might want to flick back or just listen to these words in Exodus 19 and 5. This is what God says to the people of Israel. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all the nations, you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. It's a pretty big deal. He's going, you think you're a big group, but really compared to the world, you're just this little rabble of ex-slaves, a bunch of tribes sort of come together because you've got a similar lineage. And it's like, but I want to make you the most precious possession I have on the planet. But here's the deal. You've got to learn to follow me and take my lead, because I'm your God. And so he says, I want covenant. I want relationship with you. I want a promise. I'm going to promise this to you, but you've got to promise back. And look at verse 8. This is what the people respond. The people all responded together, we will do everything the Lord has said. So you just imagine, there's this huge multitude of people, they're a bit of a rabble, come out of Egypt, and they hear God say, I want you to be my most precious, treasured possession. And they go, well, we want you too. Whatever you say, we will do. And so they enter into this covenant, and this is how it happens. Some of you know the story. Moses goes up on the mountain, he gets given the Ten Commandments. God's going, these are the things that you need to follow. This is your end of the deal. Here's how you should live. Even as that's happening, the people down at the bottom of the mountain, they're freaking out because Moses is up and they can hear the voice of God telling them these things, and they can see the smoke and the clouds. And when Moses comes down, they're just going like, Moses, don't let God talk to us anymore. It's too scary. You do the talking with God and we'll just hear it from you. They're just freaking out. But then the agreement is made. Moses comes and he says, here's the agreement. He reads them through. These are how God has said, these are the commands. These are how you should live. And he reads it through. And in chapter 24, verse 7, they responded, we will do everything the Lord has said. We will obey. So they're sort of scared, but they want the relationship because they know that he's their provider and protector, and he's been so patient with them. And so they enter this agreement. And then to seal the deal, a couple of things happen. There's a sacrifice made. In many ancient civilizations, and even today, agreements, covenants are made with an animal dying and blood being shed. And that's what happens here. It's a blood agreement. So this animal dies and they sprinkle with blood, and it means this is a done deal. But then something else happens that happens with these kind of agreements is you eat food. And here's something very unique that takes place. Look at chapter 24 and verse 9. Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel went up and saw the God of Israel. I don't know what part of him they saw, because it says you can't see his face and you can't see his full glory, but somehow he shows something of himself to them. And then in verse 11 it says, but God did not raise his hand against these leaders of the Israelites. They saw God and they ate and drank. So here's the leaders of Israel up on the side of the mountain, sitting round table with God, eating and drinking. Thus sealing the relationship, the covenant. We will be your people. And God's going, yeah, you will. Yeah, sorry, yeah, you will be my people and I will be your God. And they're going, yeah, you will be our God. The agreement is made. Then Moses is called by God to go up and receive the rest of the instruction. And so he heads up onto the mountain with his assistant Joshua, and all the people of Israel have said, you wait down here, behave, I'm going away. And Moses goes up on top, and there's more instruction given on how the people were to live. And after 40 days, which is quite a long time while people are waiting, for Moses it might have just flown by because he was with God. But as Moses is with God, the people start getting like itchy feet. And they're probably thinking, man, when God spoke, how scary was that? And now Moses has gone right up into that. And this is what it said, chapter 32. When the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron, that's Moses' brother, and they said, hey, Aaron, come make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us out of Egypt, we don't know what has happened to him. This is amazing. Within 40 days, anything you say, we will do. And in the what we will do, he'd spelled out to them very clearly twice in the first exchange, going, don't make idols, don't look for other gods like the gods of Egypt, you look to me only. And within 40 days, they've gone, this God's too scary. We don't know what's come of Moses on the hill. Maybe he's just like being obliterated, we don't know. But Aaron, can you make us a God that we can handle? Can you make us a God of our own making, and we'll follow that God, one that we can control? And so Moses forms a golden calf out of their jewelry, and the next day they party hard before the God. It's actually a very ugly scene. And Moses is on the mountain, and he's just enjoying God. He's just with God. I'm with God. And his people down there, they're not with God. And the Lord says this to Moses, go down, because your people, whom you brought up out of Egypt, have become corrupt. They've been quick to turn away from me and what I commanded them, and have made themselves an idol cast in the shape of a calf. They've bowed down to it and sacrificed to it, and have said, these are the gods Israel who brought you out of Egypt. I have seen these people, the Lord said to Moses. They are stiff-necked people. Now leave me alone, so that my anger may burn against them, and that I may destroy them. Then I will make you into a great nation. I want you to get a sense of what's going on here. The people have done the stupidest thing, which is to break their covenant with God. On all levels, it's the wrong thing. The God who brought them out of Egypt, they've gone, he's too scary, we'll make our own one out of our rings and our necklaces and our earrings, and we'll go, that's our God that got us out of Egypt. It's just a dumb thing to do. But it's also a really disloyal thing. It's a betrayal of the one who they owe their lives to, their creator, their deliverer. And they've broken the relationship. And so God is saying, I'm done with these people. They've moaned and complained all the way from Egypt to here. And when they made a deal and we came into relationship, they broke their side of the covenant within 40 days. I'm done with them, but hey, it's okay, Moses. I'll get rid of them because they're stiff-necked. I can't even turn their heads to the right direction because they're just so stubborn. So we'll just get rid of them. Moses, you have been with me. We've been 40 days up here. It's good. We've got a good thing going. So Moses, you are the new father Abraham. So in the future, instead of singing, Father Abraham had many sons, it's going to be, Father Moses had many sons. How cool will that be? Moses, we're done with these guys, Moses. You are the new Father Abraham. I'm going to make your descendants into a great nation. We're going to start again with you, Moses. So Moses is there on the mountain. He's like, yeah, I agree. I'm sick of them too. They've been a pain in the neck, stiff-necked. Whew, yeah, I'm happy to have kids and my kids and their kids' kids and kids, and we'll be a great nation and inherit your promises, God. I'm good to go. Like, it could have been a legit response, considering the circumstance. And what I want you to see is the beginning of Moses seeking God. Let's see what happens. Verse 11. But Moses sought the favor of the Lord his God. He's not seeking the favor of God for himself, by the way, here. He's seeking the favor of the Lord his God for God and for Israel. That word sought the favor, it's not like we think of it like seeking benefit from. When he says, I sought the favor, when it says he sought the favor, it's this word seek that actually means to be sick, to be grieving, to that he's coming to one where he's just feeling like he is so ill and aching and desperate and broken that he's in such great need, and it's just his life is just like just ill. And he's coming, and when it says seeking the favor, he's coming sick as he is over what's just happened, going, God, I just need to be in your presence. I need to be before your face. I need to somehow see you as you really are right in this terrible moment. That's the picture as he begins to seek God. And then he says some incredible things. He says, Lord, why should your anger burn against your people whom you brought out of Egypt with great power and a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians get to say, it was for evil intent that God brought them out to kill them on the mountain and wipe them off the face of the earth? Turn from your fierce anger, relent, and do not bring disaster on your people. You could look at that and go, oh, he's just trying to protect the people. He is, but more than that, he wants God's name to be exalted. He's saying, if you do this thing, God, then Israel, the Egyptians will speak ill of you. I don't want that, God. I want them to speak well of you, to be in wonder of what you did with the people of Israel. Not to be going like, oh, fancy that kind of God. He's mean. Rescues his people to slaughter them in the desert. He's going, that's not who you are, God. And then he says this, verse 13, remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, to whom you swore by yourself, I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars of the sky. And he goes on to talk about the promises. Do you see what he does right there? That God says, Moses, you're the new man, Father Moses. And Moses is going, no, I'm not, God. I'm not. It's Father Abraham. God, you made the promises to him. I'm just one of his children. God, it's not about me. And what I want to tell you at the start of Moses, desperately in an ill state, wanting to be in the presence of God, the first thing I see in Moses is this, is he is incredibly humble. He is a humble seeker. He is not coming to God going, God, you need to fix this because I'm sick of this. He's not going to God, God, make me a better leader. He's not going to God, God, fix this people so that I don't have such a hard job. He's not. He's coming humbly to God going, God, you need to be honored and your people need to be saved. He's so humble. He is not coming to God with any of his own needs. He's coming almost like with the need of God. Not that God has need, but he's going, God, I want you to be exalted in this, to be honored. I want your glory to show. And so Moses starts to come down from the mountain, and he's got these, you know, the Ten Commandments and his big bits of stone, and he sees what's going on as there's just this revelry going on, and it's just an ugly scene before the golden calf, very destructive. And as he sees that, he's angry at that. And he smashes those stone tablets on the ground, just smashes them. And then he goes and he grinds them up into powder and he puts it in water and he goes to the people and says, you guys drink that. He's going, you drink how you just broke the promise. You chose to make your own little gods that you're going to say, that's the God that rescued me. You drink that. Don't you realize the God who created us and who delivered us, the glorious one, and he's just sent me down with these instructions for you that you agreed to? Drink that. You broke that. He's angry. But you know what? He's not angry for long. Judgment is meted out. You read on. It's a pretty sort of gory story. But you come to verse 32. And I see Moses as he goes before God on behalf of the people. And you see his humility again. And you see his heart, though he was angry for a short time, it's not for long. He loves his people. And he loves God. And he says, but now please forgive their sin. But if not, then blot me out of the book you have written. You can sort of read it two ways. Is he going, is he threatening God? Going like, God, I'm going to blackmail you. You do this or else you've got to blot me out. You lose my friendship. But I don't think that's what he's saying. He's really going like this. God, if you can't forgive them, could you put what they owe you on me? God, it's like you're going to blot them out of the book. It's like you're going to take them out of the covenant. God, instead of that, take me out of the covenant so that they might stay in. And it's interesting, God goes, no, I can't do that. Everyone's got to face the justice of being accountable for what they've done. You can't do it for them. You know what? One day, someone will do it for them. We know that, don't we? Jesus will come and he'll be able to take people's place. But Moses couldn't take their place. But what I love about his heart is he wanted to. Do you get that? He wants God to be lifted up and he wants the people to be saved. And he's a humble seeker of God. He is not seeking him for himself. Chapter 33, verse 1. Probably the saddest part of Moses' encounter at this time. It says, then the Lord said to Moses, leave this place, you and the people you brought up out of Egypt, and go up to the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then look down at verse 3. Go up to the land flowing with milk and honey, but I will not go with you because you are a stiff-necked people and I might destroy you on the way. You've got to think about for Moses, like God was met him at the burning bush. God was with him in Egypt. God is leading by fire and by cloud. Each day, by the way, Moses sleeps and stays in a tent just outside the camp. And God's glory comes and God meets with Moses every day in the tent. And as Moses has to lead this ragtag bunch of people, he's going to God to inquire from God. And God's going, yeah, that person needs to know this and that tribe over there needs to pay attention to this. And here's some wisdom of which way to go tomorrow. So he's constantly in tune with God. God's leading him, guiding him, empowering him. And then God says, by the way, Moses, get the people. Off you go. I'm not coming. I'm not coming. I'll send my angel with you, but I'm not coming. And then we encounter another side to Moses. Not only a humble seeker, but Moses becomes a desperate seeker. Moses is suddenly thinking, how do I go without God? How do I move another mile without God? How do I live and lead for another day without God? Moses said to the Lord, verse 12, you've been telling me lead these people, but you've not let me know whom you will send with me. And he starts to plead with God, and there's this little interchange. I don't think we have all the info here, but look at verse 4. The Lord replies to him, my presence will go with you. I'll give you rest. So you think, oh, phew, it's okay. So Moses, he was just testing you. He was just saying, this is serious. I'm not going to come, but yeah, okay, I'll come. And I'm not sure what Moses is thinking right here, but he's just heard God say, okay, Moses, it's okay. My presence will be with you. But I want you to look at how desperate Moses is with his reply, even though God has just said, my presence will go with you. Verse 15, then Moses said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. He's going, I hear you, God, but suddenly I'm really nervous right here, and I'm desperate. Because I'm going, God, I cannot imagine what life will look like tomorrow without you. I can't imagine what it's going to be like to lead these people without you. I can't imagine how we as Israel are going to journey this desert without you. We desperately need you, God. Verse 16, how will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth? What will tell people that we are your treasured possession? And In verse 17, and the Lord said to Moses, I'll do the very thing you have asked because I'm pleased with you and I know you by name. And God meets Moses where in his desperation he says, yeah, I'm going to go with you. And then we come to this side of Moses, because as Moses is humble and he's desperate, there's this side which I cannot believe, Moses, how he talks to God. Did you notice that earlier where he's saying, God, don't do that. Can't you remember? Don't you remember that? You better do this. It's like he's quite demanding of God, really. And I think that Moses is a bold seeker. But he's bold because he knows God. He's bold because he believes in God. And in every area where he's bold, it actually makes sense because of who God is. And then that's where we come to this verse 18. Then Moses said, now show me your glory. And like I said earlier, it's like, well, Moses, come on, you've seen it. You see his glory every day. You've seen it in the big stuff as well. Why do you need to see more of God's glory? And I think at this point, Moses is feeling so ill in himself, wanting the presence of God. And he's coming humbly before God, desperate before God. But he has this bold request because he's just going, God, I just need more right now. And I need to see your glory to be reassured that everything's going to be okay. And the Lord says, okay. That's okay, we'll do that. He says, what's going to happen is you're going to go back up on the mountain and there's a little cave, hole in the rock there, and you hop inside that and I'm going to come and I'm going to put my, as it were, hand across it and go on past, and then you'll get to see like the backside of me because you can't see my face to face. You can't see my full glory. You're saying, show me your glory? You cannot see my glory, but I'm going to show you my glory. I'm going to show you what you need to see. Let's make it clear, Moses is not going, God, I want to be a better boss of these people. And he's not going, we really got to get to the promised land because I've got a good house and land package going there. And he's not even asking the real obvious one as a leader, going, God, please fix this bunch. He's not asking that. He's going, God, I just need to see you. That's what I need. I need to see you. And he comes humbly, desperate, but bold. Chapter 34, verse 5, get a load of this. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and he stood there with him and he proclaimed his name. So Moses is in this little cave, there's God sheltering him from his full glory, wandering past and going, here, this is what you need to see, this side of me here. This is my best side. And he passes in front of Moses and he proclaims these words. Look, listen to these words. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. I tell you, there is not a better side of God for Moses in that moment and for the people in Israel in that moment than that side. You see, as we seek God, he will show us what we need to see. Moses did not need to see another miracle that day. He did not need to see more lightning and fire. He did not need to see a rock split or a Red Sea split in two. He did not need that. The people did not need that day. But they come to God and they say, God, show me your glory. God doesn't show all the glory. He never can to us. We couldn't handle it. He says, I will show you what you need to see. And right now what you need to see in your sin and your brokenness and the pain you're in and your rebellion, you need to see this. I'm gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, abounding in love. But I'm still just. And rebellion will still be noted and people will still be accountable. It's what they needed. It's what Moses needed right at that moment. And Moses bows to the ground and worships. And he says, Lord, if I've found favor in your eyes, then let the Lord go with us. Although this is a stiff-necked people, forgive our wickedness and our sin and take us as your inheritance. And then the Lord said, I am making a covenant with you. Before all your people, I will do wonders never before done in any nation in the world. And get these words. The people you live among will see how awesome is the work that I, the Lord, will do for you. I want to tell you this. As we seek God, not only will He show us what we need to see, but as we seek God, watch and see what He can do in and through His people. Watch and see what He can do. And so we're gonna continue to seek God this morning. And as we come to seek Him, we need to come humbly. We're not here this morning to fix some stuff or to fix ourselves. That's not why we're here this morning. We're here this morning because we need a fresh vision of God. We need to see Him. And He is willing to show us what we need to see. We need to come humbly before Him. We need to come desperate. I don't know, like some of us might not be desperate right now. But we do. Well, like imagine this, that tomorrow you wake up and God's not with you. I mean, we have the beautiful promise that through Christ and His Spirit in us, He will never leave us. But man, could we do life without God? That's the attitude we've got to come with today, going, I can't do this life without you. Desperate. But come boldly in these next moments as we sing, as we are in silence, as we pray. Just come boldly and be going, God, show me your glory today. And I'm confident of this, that God, over these next weeks, He will show us what we need to see. And then He's going, hey, and watch and see what I'm going to do in and through you. I just invite you, let's just stand, and we're going to sing the song as a prayer to God, right as we continue on. God, I need you. I need you today.